You know, we spent a whole year last year studying the questions that Jesus asked. And much of his teaching was actually in the form of questions. Often when he was questioned, his answer was a question on top of a question to make people think for themselves. Jesus didn't give very many instructions that were actually direct. Most of the time, his teaching came in the form of a story, and people were supposed to understand the story and apply it to their lives. Today's passage from Matthew is one of the few instructions he gave, and it comes sandwiched in between the parable of the lost sheep and some teaching about forgiveness. And it would be easy to miss if it weren't so very terribly important. Matthew 18, verse 15 says, in Jesus' words, "If another member of the church sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone. If the member listens to you, you have regained that one. But if you are not listened to, take one or two others along with you so that every word may be confirmed by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If the member refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if the offender refuses to listen even to the church, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector." I'm going to go on, even though your bulletin only says two verses. "Truly I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, truly I tell you, if two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them." This is very direct, very clear teaching on how to deal with conflict. It says in the church, but I think it applies to all of life. And I think it applies whether the conflict is between individuals or groups or bodies of people, countries even. And that if we really applied it, there would be much less conflict on the face of the earth. So then why don't we? Well, I think part of the secret to that is that often we are so wounded we don't want to talk about it. And other times people are afraid to talk with somebody else because they think they're going to lose their temper. And they don't want to do that. And sometimes I think people don't confront conflict head on because they think, well, maybe what they're feeling is silly or unimportant. And so sometimes they'll go and talk to somebody else about it to see if they feel the same way before they actually talk to the person they're upset with. But in this passage, Jesus' teaching is pretty clear. What we're supposed to do with conflict, When you're upset with somebody, Carl, I'm going to pick on you again. What we're supposed to do is go directly to that person and say, Carl, I can't even make up a reason to be mad at you, Carl. Oh, Lois can. But to go directly to that person. Now, what do we often do? We avoid it. We put it as on the bottom of the to-do list because we're afraid of it. In my experience, the things I'm most afraid of doing, once I tackle them, turn out to be a lot easier than I anticipated they would be. And handling conflict is one of the things that I tend to want to avoid to do. But usually, when there's a problem and I go to the person, I find out it's not nearly as big a problem if I explain to them what upset me. Usually, they're understanding and we wind up talking about it and resolving it. Or we agree to disagree. Anybody here ever agree to disagree with somebody? And then you can move on, right? It's been very rarely that I've talked to somebody one-on-one and we haven't been able to come to some kind of an agreement. But Jesus takes that into account, says that, you know, maybe sometimes it's going to be somebody who's so deep in sin they'll be hard-headed. He's talking about somebody who's offended you, who has sinned against you. But I'm expanding that to be something more than someone who is sinning and you need to confront them. That's the way the church has traditionally interpreted this passage and the way that Jesus intended it, to be someone who is deep in sin. But I think this applies to every interpersonal relationship. So then he says, if you don't get satisfaction from one-on-one, then take two or three people with you. Don't expand it to five or six until you've tried it with two or three. What happens sometimes? We go to 5, 6, 7, 8, 12 people and talk about the problem before we've ever talked with the person we're upset with. And that multiplies it without any resolution. And then, Jesus says, if you don't get satisfaction when you take two or three with you, then tell the whole church. Now, the way the early church interpreted this in the early days of Christianity is they had a spot at the front of the church where people could make confession. So if I had hurt Carl, tell me that you can't think of anything now. Then I could stand up in front of the church and apologize to him and make amends. Or if somebody confronted me with a sin I hadn't seen in myself, I would stand there and say, I am so sorry, and make public confession. And they did that before communion because they felt that it was so important to have a clean conscience before you took communion. Wow. To have your sins wiped away, to have them be as though they never existed before taking communion. People that study conflicts have identified three different kinds of conflicts. They've identified interpersonal, intrapersonal, and substantive conflicts. An interpersonal conflict is the kind I've been talking about, you know, me and Carl here. Just a conflict between two people. It's usually over something very personal. It's usually a slight or an offense, or sometimes it can be a deep thing, a real wound. Vic's grinning away at me because he was mad at me a couple weeks ago and we resolved it. So he's grinning away because he's thinking, we did this and it worked. man, he's right. We did, and it did. It actually does work, folks. Years ago, on a beautiful summer day, my dad had spent the entire day washing his car. It was a new car, and he was so proud of that car. And he lovingly washed the thing by hand, and then he waxed it, and it shone magnificently. And he went inside for a drink, and Dad was a drinker. So one drink led to two or three, and later in the evening, he went out to, you know, check the shine on his car. And the neighbor's cat had walked through the wet flower bed and all across his car. Dad did not go to the neighbor. Now, if he had gone to Jerry and Pat, they'd have said, "Ah, Jim, we'll take care of that for you." And they'd have run out and wiped the cat paws off. It was mud on a beige car. And they probably would have invited him in for another drink. But instead, as happens with many folks who have imbibed too much, he got really mad and decided not to talk to him. Because obviously they had sent the cat to walk across his car. It was personal. Well, not only did Dad decide he wasn't going to talk to the neighbors, but my mother was no longer allowed to have coffee with Pat in the mornings. My brothers were no longer allowed to play with the kids, and I wasn't allowed to babysit for them anymore. And they had the neighborhood swimming pool in their backyard. So guess who was no longer allowed to swim? Then Dad decided that wasn't enough, so he was going to build a fence between the yards. So he did. And then he bought his own pool, because apparently we griped and complained about not being able to go swimming. Do you see how it grows and grows and festers? How many people were hurt by that? And it was so simple and could have been solved so easily. Now, Dad, he might have been worried that he'd explode and get angry, but he did that anyway. He just exploded on us instead of them. He took it personally when, anybody here have a cat? How well do you have your cat trained? It wasn't personal. I think he took it as a major affront because he thought they should have seen the paw prints on his beige car from next door and taken care of it without being told anything. And of course, but that's something we do. You should notice if I'm upset with you. You should know it because you should be able to read minds, right? That's what we think sometimes. The people should be mind readers and know what's upsetting us. Well, all of this is the interpersonal kind of conflict between two people. And all of it has the potential to be resolved if we do what Jesus told us to do, to go directly to the person. Dad didn't. He died still mad at those neighbors. And they probably never knew what had happened because we weren't allowed to talk to them and tell them. Another kind of conflict is intrapersonal. This is actually a good kind of conflict that moves us along spiritually. Intrapersonal is inside yourself, within you. I've been in ministry for I don't know, I'd have to stop to count. I'm not sure how many years, 25 maybe. And for probably the first 15 years, I could not wear colored nail polish to serve communion. Where does it say that in the Bible? It's not even in Leviticus. It's something I had going on in my head. Nobody ever said anything to me about it. You'll notice I'm wearing colored nail polish today. I finally got over that. But sometimes we have conflicts within us, religious, spiritual conflicts that have no substance whatever, that have to do with a preconception. And other times, they're very serious ones. My mother-in-law refers to her Mary Martha complex. Mary and Martha were the sisters of Lazarus, and Martha was being hospitable, and Mary was sitting at Jesus' knee and learning from him, and Martha was upset with her sister. Well, sometimes you can have that kind of conflict within yourself. And I've experienced it, whether to be the hospitable one or whether to spend my time learning. Should I be more studious or more engaged in mission? These are conflicts we have over how to manage our time and our priorities. And they're very real, and they can move us forward spiritually. So intrapersonal conflicts within us are not always a bad thing. Sometimes they're a very good thing that can help us to grow and develop. Feeling convicted over a personal sin can move you forward into repentance and into giving something up. So intrapersonal conflicts are another form. And then the third kind is substantive. And these are often conflicts within groups over an issue. And I'm going to name a couple of what I think are unimportant ones. But they're very important to some people, or they wouldn't be issues. One conflict many churches have. I've had questions in this church, but by the way, I have never experienced really serious conflict within a church, the kind that causes a congregation to split or a group of people to walk away. I've never experienced that. So I hope I never do. But one conflict is how people should dress. Should they dress up or dress down? And in this church, pretty much you dress any way you want, right? How many people here who are over the age of 50 dress more casually now than you did 40 years ago in church? Some people like to dress up, and they continue to. I like to dress up. But even so, my dress has changed from my first years in ministry when I thought I had to wear a dress all the time. We are the kind of congregation now that welcomes people no matter how they're dressed. And that's as it should be. Nowhere in the Bible does it tell you how you should dress for worship, or whether or not you can wear colored nail polish. A side issue to that one is whether or not the choir should wear robes and whether or not the minister should wear a robe. Sometimes people have deeply held beliefs about those things. Sometimes the reason for doing something or not doing it isn't what you would expect. Sometimes we make assumptions. Quite frankly, the reason I haven't worn a robe very often since I came here is that I had gained so much weight I couldn't fit in it. Not something you'd expect, right? Guess what? But don't expect me to see me in it very often. Even though I like to dress up, I also like to be approachable. And sometimes I think people see a minister in a robe and think, well, that person is out there and other and can't be approached. Very often what separates us in a conflict isn't the real issue, but assumptions about what the other person or group is thinking. And the only way to resolve that is to do what Jesus said, to go to that person. And sometimes conflicts cannot be resolved because the substantive issues are so important to groups or individuals that they cannot come to an agreement, but have to agree to disagree. Many, many years ago, my husband and I were serving in Conneaut, two different churches. And I went to visit, Ash was away on a mission trip, and I went to visit one of his parishioners. And the minute I walked in the hospital room door, Bob looked up from the bed and he said, "You know, I think women shouldn't be ministers." And I said, "Okay, then we have something to disagree about. How about if we talk about something else? I don't think I'm going to persuade you otherwise. And it's obviously you're not going to persuade me otherwise." He said, "Okay." So we talked about a whole lot of other things. I thought we had an irreconcilable difference of opinion, and that probably his reason was biblically based, because many people refer to 1 Timothy and have biblical reasons for believing that women shouldn't be in ministry. I disagree with them, but we can agree to disagree. But as I was ready to leave his room and asked him if he would like me to pray with him, he said yes, and then he said, "I still don't believe women should be ministers, but," he said, "a lady can be a minister, and you're a lady." He had had a disagreement with a previous woman minister. And that was the reason for his feelings. It wasn't a biblical reason. It was personal. And he resolved it that way in his mind, in his heart, and for himself. If Ash hadn't been on that mission trip, if we'd never had that chance to talk and to share, he'd have felt that way to his dying day. We still exchange Christmas cards today. And he addresses them to Reverend Ash and Lady Pastor Peg. What Jesus said could work. I think it could work between nations. But, you know, they don't ask me. I think if the United Nations tried this, if the European Union tried it, if we prayed hard enough, maybe even some of what seemed to be irreconcilable differences would come to reconciliation. I invite you now, before we take communion together, to examine your heart and to see if there's anyone that you're irritated with, that you need to talk with. If there's any anger that's unresolved. If there's any need for forgiveness from you or for you, that you resolve to do something about it. Perhaps not in the next few minutes, perhaps not in the next few days or even this week. But resolve to do something about it and to get rid of that terrible burden. For Jesus Christ invites to his table all those who seek to have a relationship with him, who want to be in communion with him. And I see that today we have nothing gluten-free on the table. Please, thank you. Let's pray together. On the night in which he was betrayed, Jesus took bread and blessed it, gave thanks to God for it, and then he broke it and he gave it to the disciples and he said to them, "This is my body broken for you. Eat this in remembrance of me." And he took the last cup of the meal,